This is Friday Forum. I'm Rachel Cobb for KGLP. Yesterday morning, I recorded a conference call, which included New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas and his staff, on the discussion of the national monuments, such as Bear's Ears, that are being considered for cutbacks by the Zinke administration at the Interior Department under the auspices of the Trump administration.
It is now my pleasure to turn this conference over to Melissa Watson. You may begin.
Great. Thank you so much. And welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Melissa Watson. I'm the Vice President for Conservation at the Wilderness Society. And we're glad to have you join us to talk about the review of our country's national monuments, which was initiated by the Trump administration in April, and which threatens many of our nation's most treasured historic, cultural, and natural wonders. There was a 60-day comment period, and during that short period, over 2.7 million public comments were sent to the Department of the Interior, the largest comment period in the agency's history, which really reflects the level of public engagement from Americans on these issues and how much people care about our national monuments and don't want to see them lost. Our nation's national monuments really protect irreplaceable national treasures, and they also support the livelihoods of local communities and preserve the unique local histories and cultures. Each of these special places is represented by years of work by communities who sought to protect their heritage for future generations. And we're lucky today to have brought together some of these state and local leaders who represent those communities who could be impacted by efforts to dismantle protections for our national monuments. So let me start by introducing our lineup of speakers and also note that we have some public lands and legal experts on the line who will be able to answer questions at the end. Let me start by introducing New Mexico Attorney General Hector H. Balderas, who is a strong advocate for the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument and the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument. He has challenged Secretary Zinke on the legal aspects of rescinding or reducing monuments that have the overwhelming support of New Mexicans. We are also joined today by California Assemblymember Cecilia Aguiar-Curry, whose district includes the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument, and who led the charge in the California State Legislature to pass a bipartisan resolution in favor of not only the Berryessa Snow Mountain area, but the six other national monuments under review in California, including Giant Sequoia, Carrizo Plain, Cascade Siskiyou, the San Gabriels, Mojave Trails, and Sand to Snow. We're also joined today by Joe Sheehy of Tucson, Arizona, who's a longtime member of the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society, a bighorn sheep hunter and outdoorsman who will speak about the role of the Ironwood Forest National Monument in keeping bighorn sheep and other species flourishing in southern Arizona. Fawn Douglas is with us and is a member of the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe and a former tribal councilwoman. And she will talk about how the petroglyphs and other cultural features of Nevada's Gold Butte National Monument influence her work as a Native American artist. She advocated for the initial protections of Gold Butte, land that's sacred to local tribes. We also have Blake Spalding, who is the co-owner of Hell's Backbone Grill at Boulder Mountain Lodge in Boulder, Utah. And the neighboring Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument is vital to the local economy and to her thriving restaurant business, which may not survive without the monument. Davis Filfred is with us of Aneth, Utah. He is a Navajo Nation Council delegate, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and a former Navajo tribal police officer. Davis is a staunch supporter of the Bear's Ears National Monument, which is sacred ancestral land that's been threatened by vandalism and looting. And finally, we have Fernando Clemente, who is a wildlife biologist, local businessman, and avid sportsman, and also president of the board of the Friends of Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument. And Fernando will speak about the monument's role in protecting desert wildlife habitat and promoting the health and well-being of Las Cruces residents. So let me start by turning it over and thanking New Mexico Attorney General Balderas.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing me to participate. Can you all hear me clearly?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Well, I'm pleased to speak with all of you today about the need to protect our national monuments for all Americans. An assault on one of our national monuments is an assault on all of us. And frankly, it's an assault on the unique culture of New Mexico and our Western culture in the United States of America. In New Mexico, I'm proud to say that the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument and the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument are huge American success stories. Both monuments boast the overwhelming support of New Mexicans, including tribal members, land-grant heirs, local governments, hunters, and many other outstanding New Mexicans. These monuments not only protect New Mexico's heritage, but they put our people to work as economic drivers for our rural communities. Outdoor recreation is a multi-billion dollar industry in New Mexico, employing nearly 100,000 people. The number of visitors to the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument has doubled in recent years, and our rural communities surrounding the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument have repeat benefits of increased visitors as well. New Mexicans, visitors, and all Americans alike value our monuments for reasons that are varied, as from conservation, ecology, economic opportunity, culture, history, archaeology, and spirituality, to name a few. To rescind and reduce these monuments would be short-sighted and reckless, but most importantly, they would threaten the diverse benefits in our communities that rely on them. The legality of the monument designations are well established in the American Ideals embodied in the Antiquities Act that created the monument system more than 110 years ago. Let me be clear. As the chief legal officer of the state of New Mexico, I believe this act delegates to the president only the authority to declare monuments, not to abolish them. Any attempt to revoke the designations by the Trump administration would not only be legally suspect, but would be open and subject to court action. Finally, it's been a profound honor to be not only monitoring but participating in this review process. These monuments deserve full protection, and I urge Secretary Zinke to respect the wishes of more than 2.7 million Americans who commented in support of these national monuments. And I also ask the Trump administration and Secretary Zinke to honor the legal designation of all monuments and to protect them so that future generations can experience these treasured places and cultural heritages as we have in New Mexico. I do have my chief legal counsel here as well that will stand for questions, but I look forward to everyone's comments. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we'll hear from Assemblymember Aguiar Curry.
Good morning. Thank you very much for including me in this conversation. It's very important to my region and my district, but throughout the entire nation and California. And I'm honored to have taken the role and providing Assembly Joint Resolution 15, a letter of support from both the bipartisan of the Assembly and the Senate, and a letter of support from California Governor Edmund G. Brown. I live not far from these, from Berryessa Snow Mountain. The monument came into being in 2015. President Barack Obama protected 330,000, almost 331,000 acres of federal public land. And it is in a prehistoric and historic legacy. And it maintains an array of scientific resources, including prehistoric, historic, scientific values. And it is an incredible area. And I think many people in our particular region were unaware of what the beauty and the historical value was in this area. I personally worked very hard to get this monument passed, starting at the grassroots level, working with stakeholders, farmers. I worked with cattle ranchers. I worked with horseback associations, off-road vehicle associations, the Wilderness Society, with the Sierra Clubs, We've worked with everyone to make sure we had ample public outreach that people understood and understood what the importance is to save this beautiful area. You know, when President Trump has been threatening us on our monuments, it really took, I took it very personally of what was happening. We all worked so hard, and just to see school children being excited about the designation of a monument right out their windows at the Winters Elementary School and asking how can they go up there, where would the trails be, and they wanted to be part of the planning process once we got this through with President Obama. So I just want to stress is that people want to get out. People want to explore nature. People want to get out and understand what's going around in their surroundings. And it is a vital part of all of California. I sat with many of my colleagues, and as they expressed their concerns about the Trump administration taking away these beautiful lands, we were very concerned. So we forget about the part, not only that, but the economic benefits that we've seen already with the designation, and we know that this can grow. I am honored to fight the fight for California, as well as some of my other cohorts here at the state capitol. And we will continue to fight the fight. Whatever we can do, we will be there for the monuments and for making sure that we protect our beautiful resources in the state of California.
Great, thank you. And next we have Joe Sheehy from Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, I'm Joe Sheehy. I'm a past president of the Arizona Desert Bighorn Sheep Society and a longtime Tucsonian. I watched the formation of the Ironwood National Monument, supported, was very involved in the process at the beginning. Even was skeptical about the process and what really would happen to the landscape as a result of the monument and how it would impact different local users. Since the creation of the monument, I have seen nothing but positive signs in all aspects of the monument and the monument use, as well as the increase in the desert bighorn sheep herd, the preservation of the wilderness and ruggedness of the monument area. I think the influence that the BLM has now on the monument and the presence they have on the monument has helped keep that ruggedness and wildness intact. I've watched the desert bighorn sheep herd, the indigenous desert bighorn sheep herd in the monument area, increase fivefold in the last 10 years. I would hope that nothing would happen that would change the status of the monument and the influence that the BLM could have over the monument. The presence out there has cleaned up the monument, has stopped the illegal wildcat shooting, dumping. I would cringe to see anything happen that's different now out at the Ironwood National Monument.
Great. Thank you, Joe. Fawn Douglas is our next speaker.
Good morning. I'm Fawn Douglas. I'm a member of the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe, a former tribal council member and Native American artist. My art is inspired by the rock writings of the Gold Butte National Monument and other public lands here in southern Nevada. I became involved with Gold Butte about 4 years ago when I was shown photos of what was happening in the area. There were bullet holes covering the petroglyphs and whole swatches of rock writings that had been torn out. Joshua trees had been knocked over for no reason at all, and I was mad. I checked out the area myself, seeing the destruction with my own eyes, and felt that I had to do something to take a stand and spread the word about this special place. Gold Butte is special and sacred to the Southern Paiute people and for everyone who visits here. Gold viewed as Paiute ancestral land, and the land was once part of the Mwapa Band of Paiutes Reservation. It is also home to the desert tortoise, a species that relies on this area for its survival. This is our ancestral land, and we have promoted its importance to tribal youth. We now have Gold Butte youth activists who have gone to D.C. to lobby in support of Gold Butte National Monument status. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and protecting her cultural heritage and identity is very important to me. We have worked to get across to our Nevada congressional delegation that it's not just conservationists who want this monument, it's members of many tribes, and there have been more than 90,000 statements of support from Nevadans. When Secretary Zinke came to visit, he did not contact the Las Vegas Paiute tribe. He was supposed to meet with the Mwapa Paiute Tribal Council and cut the visit down to a short phone call. He did not listen to us. We urge him to listen and to leave Gold Butte National Monument alone. Thank you.
Thank you, Fawn. Blake Spalding is next.
Hi, I'm Blake Spalding, co-owner of Hell's Backbone Grill and Farm in Boulder, Utah. We are on the edge of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Last year, we were the only restaurant in the state to be nominated for a James Beard Award. The Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument informs both my life and my work. I moved here to start the restaurant 18 years ago. Before that, I had been working as a cook in Grand Canyon on river trips. It was the declaration of the monument that brought us here to start our restaurant. It's a truly magnificent area, and it's a privilege and an honor to live and work on the edge of it. We have several businesses here in town. We have our restaurant, which serves three meals a day, 7 days a week, 9 months out of the year. We also have a 6.5-acre organic farm where we grow the food for the restaurant and four full-time farmers. In our town of about 250 people, we provide 50 jobs. When Secretary Zinke came to do his analysis of our monument, he declined to speak with our delegation of 150 businesses from Grand Staircase, principally businesses from Tropic, Escalante, and Boulder that are strongly against any sort of tampering with our beloved monument. He didn't want to meet with us, so we never got a chance to make our case. The Utah delegation is trying to have President Trump rescind the monument based on their idea that our county is in an economic crisis because of it. And that's simply not the case. We have about 5,000 people that live in our county of 5,000 square miles. Last year alone, our county did $78 million worth of tourism-based business, much of it due directly to the monument. And this is just the direct tourism revenue. That doesn't even include all the other ways the monument adds to the economy, like, for example, people visiting and then deciding to build a home here. There are literally, in our county, every business is hiring. There is no need for jobs here. And I'm trying really hard to get that message out because that is their principal talking point for why the monument needs to be rescinded or shrunk. And so every construction crew, every clinic, every school, every restaurant is looking currently for employees. What we don't have is people to work them. So the idea that the monument needs to be damaged in order to create jobs is unequivocally a false narrative. Without the monument, our business wouldn't exist. And I have to say that, sadly, this review process has already had a negative impact on our communities in that it's reopened old fights and old wounds. Our monument has been in place for 21 years, and I would say that collectively our communities had come together and come to appreciate the quiet use tourism that we draw here. Now there's all these original, unfounded fears from the some of the locals that are coming back in anger. So it's really hard to say what's going to happen here, but our strong wish is that the monument be left alone and that our businesses and our communities and our families are able to just continue to do the profound and beautiful work that we do of holding the door open for people who want to have a genuine wilderness experience in the precious national monument that we have here. I have lived and worked in a national park, and the beauty of a monument is that you're allowed to just walk around. You don't need a license or a permit to get in. You can camp. You can go with your dog. You have an unfettered access to true wilderness. This is something that not only our country needs, but actually our world. And in a time of climate change, these vast areas of wilderness really need protection. It's critical. Thank you.
Thanks, Blake. Next, we are joined by Davis Philfred. Davis?
Good morning, every one of you. My name is Davis Philfred. I'm a member of the Navajo Nation 23rd Council. I sit on the Resource and Development Committee. We are in the midst of a meeting, but I stepped out. I'm also a Bear Ears Coalition member. I'm also a Bear Ears Commissioner member. And I do want to say that I do support wilderness state itself. And I got a chance to work in the Lizardhead Wilderness in Colorado and the Rockies. So I do support the wilderness. And speaking for the Bear Ears, I do, on many occasions, I did support for the Bear Ears. We designated the 1.9. And it was negotiated. Without negotiation, it was dropped down to what it is today. And right now, we're in strong support, not only from the Navajo Nation, but the Zunis, the Hopis, the Utes, and the Uintas are all in support of this monument. Not only that, we have a strong support from the Utah tribal leaders, which includes the Paiutes, the Goshutes, the Shoshone Bandits, and many other tribes are in support of this monument because it's our heritage, it's our language, it's our culture. We have many, many runes still that are in the area. We have a lot of petroglyphs, and they're being used as target shootings. And a lot of lootings have been going on and still is today. We have many remains in that area, and if I was to tell you the story on how the Bear Ears got its name, it'll take a couple of days. But the story behind it and the history that we have, this goes back way before the Long Walk, when Kit Carson tried to round up all the Navajos, many of the Navajos, and the refuge in that area. So we have a lot of stories, a lot of history in the Bear Ears National Monument. And I'm here to say that Secretary of Interior Zinke really needs to stand for the Navajos, not only for the Navajos, but all tribes across the nation. He just needs to brave up himself, because that's his job, is to stand for the Native American and stand up to Trump and tell him, hey, this is what you gave me this job for, and I'm here to stand for the Native American. And he shouldn't be recommending that these monuments needed to be reduced, rescinded. We're here to say that we're ready for anything. And we told him that all the tribes were willing to go into battle in terms of litigation, and we're here to fight for our monuments, because it's not only for the people. It's a habitat to many species. There's a lot of animals that live in these areas, and this is their home. This is their, you know, we're talking about big mule deer, elks and bears and mountain lions. They live in this area. Not only that, it's timber. I come from a place where all the petroleum have gone and done their work, and they just got what they wanted. Now we're left with contamination. Our soil is contaminated. Our water base is contaminated. Our air is contaminated. All their debris is still left behind. And EPA is not doing anything about it. We have roads everywhere. And I don't want that in my Bear Ears region, in the area, because it's devastating and it's going to ruin the land. We want this place to be as is since day one. And I do want to thank you for your support as well. I do enjoy listening to all the comments. Thank you.
Thank you. And our final speaker is Fernando Clemente.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure for me to be speaking with you today in regards of the importance of our national monuments. My name is Fernando Clemente, as it was mentioned before. I am a wildlife biologist, wildlife management consultant, hunter, and a proud president of the board of the Friends of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks. My involvement with the conservation of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks area started long before the listening session with Secretary Sally Jewell. I've been hunting these amazing areas for many years, and it became such a passion for me and another sportsman that I decided to build my career and my business around it. I am a proud graduate from New Mexico State University in a wildlife science program. Like other hunters, this land connects us to our time-tested traditions that our parents and grandparents experienced before us and were able to pass on to us. As a Hispanic hunter, we have a special connection to this land, and we understand the importance of wildlife populations to future generations. It is because of these connections that sportsmen have been in the forefront of the conversation to preserve Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks from the beginning. The Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument designations puts a star on the map. Thanks to the monument, our community is experiencing a renaissance of sorts. Las Cruces now is a destination, and people come from near and far to see wildlife, cultural, historical, and natural wonders contained within the monument. Hunting is very important for the sustainability of wildlife populations. We all know that. Makes billions of dollars a year. But at the same time, wildlife populations are very important for the hunting industry. The four major habitat components to maintain a wildlife population, we all know, are food, water, cover, and space, which is explained why we need every acre located within the La Sierra de las Uvas, Robledos, and West Potrillo Mountains. These areas also contain important watersheds that wildlife and our community depends upon. As a fellow sportsman and a wildlife biologist, I am here to tell that if we lose these areas, we will never get them back. And the people that will suffer the consequences will be our future generations. It is very funny how on our national monument, on the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, it's not only three people that they're in favor of this protection. It's thousands of people of New Mexicans, sportsmen, veterans, small business owners, Native American tribes, Hispanic groups, even faith leaders. Everybody wants these areas protected because everybody has a connection to these areas. I've been very fortunate to be able to see these areas are part of the Chihuahuan Desert. And I've been very fortunate since I was 8 years old to be able to travel and see all the Chihuahuan Desert from the south to the north. It starts on the San Luis Potosí Plateau. It ends by Albuquerque, New Mexico, from the east to the west. And I seen all these areas, and I used to see amazing things. I used to see groups of antelopes, 100, 200 antelope roaming, just like in Wyoming. Now, if you see a group of 30, it's because you have a healthy population. Not only the antelope, I seen all the grasslands being depleted. One day I was flying with my father in the helicopter. My father is a doctor, PhD, wildlife management. And he told me to look at very close what I was seeing because one day it was going to be gone. We were in Mexico. Let's not go too far. We have a neighboring country that if you go over there, you will never see the lands that we have here over there. And it's the same habitat, the same area, the same desert. And because of that, I never understood what he meant at that time when I was 8 years old. And now I understand perfectly what happened. I never thought that in my short life I was going to be able to see so many land gone. And I'm not against anybody. I believe, I like I always have said, the natural resources were created for the sustainability of humankind. But our obligation is making sure that our future generations have the resources necessary for their sustainability. The protection of natural areas, such as national monuments, provides that balance for that responsibility and that sustainability to be achieved. So I think Secretary Zinke and Trump administration, they need to listen to the citizens. They need to listen to the people that own these lands, because these lands are ours. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all. And operator, I believe we're ready to open the call for questions.
Our first question will come from Jennifer Yakinen, ENE News.
Great. Thanks so much for having the call. My question is for the Attorney General. I'm wondering, some of your counterparts in other states have also raised questions over the legality of the Trump administration trying to reduce or rescind monuments. And I wonder if you've had any discussions about filing or taking on a joint opposition with some of those other states where there's also monuments up for discussion to challenge the Trump administration should they move on this.
Hi, this is James, the communications director for Attorney General Balvedis. The Attorney General had to step out, but I have general counsel here, Ken Stalter, S-T-A-L-T-E-R, general counsel for the Office of the New Mexico Attorney General, and here he is.
I think here working with Attorney General Balvedis, what we've seen is that the impact that state attorneys general can have is just that much greater than when they coordinate. We work together. We've seen that on immigration issues. We saw that recently with some work on the Communications Decency Act and sex trafficking issues, where 50 state attorneys generals banded together to address a defect in the law. And I raise those examples just to say that if we have groups of state attorneys generals working together as a quasi-fourth branch of government to protect the rights of their citizens, it is going to have that much more impact. And if it comes to a circumstance where any affected state is seeking to ask a court to intervene, I would certainly encourage other states to share those interests and share those values in support of monuments to support the affected regions.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Amanda Paulson, the Christian Science Monitor.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. I was curious if, I think you said there are some legal experts on here too, if someone could walk through a little bit what, you know, what the next steps will be, assuming Zinke's report includes some recommendations for either reducing or eliminating some monuments in terms of the challenges that will need to happen, how long it will take for action to occur, some of the legal challenges will be out there.
Sure. Let me turn it over to Nada Culver, who is our senior counsel at the Wilderness Society.
Hi. So I think we have two steps that we're looking for in this process. One would be the secretary's recommendations, and the second would be, to the extent those recommendations include presidential action, what those actions are. To the extent that those presidential actions involve any action to undercut the existence, size, or protections of these monuments, those would give rise to legal action, I would think, very swiftly by a range of interests, from the conservation community to some tribal interests to potentially attorneys general, as you heard today. And I think those would come swiftly to challenge the president's authority to take any of those actions to undermine the monuments that were established, whether by President Obama, President Clinton, or President George W. Bush, all of which are right now under review.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Alex DeVoid, Arizona Republic.
Hi. My question was pretty similar. was how quickly and what legal recourse could be taken. If they do come with a decision on the 24th, does anyone know if a lawsuit might be filed in the next the day, is the process already in place to file such a lawsuit or take legal recourse?
You know, as we've watched the rhetoric of this administration, this is Nina Culver again, around these monuments, we are certainly, and not just obviously the Wilderness Society, but as I mentioned, a host of different groups and entities, we are taking very seriously these threats and have been preparing for whatever action could be taken depending on how the threat materializes. So, yes, I think many different groups, tribes, attorneys general, businesses, you name it, are looking into, have been considering for some time how they could frame up legal action and will be prepared to take action as quickly as possible.
And that the Wilderness Society included in that?
Absolutely.
Oh, gotcha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Valerie Colvici, Reuters.
This is a question for anyone just regarding a potential legal challenge. I'm wondering how much weight a court would give to the volume of public comments that were submitted in the process. Does that become a useful argument for your case if Zinke were to recommend shrinking or shutting down some of these monuments?
This is Ken Stalter with the Office of New Mexico Attorney General Hector Valderas. My opinion is that the court wouldn't necessarily look to the number of comments, but what's crucial is that those comments reflect the value of these monuments to the communities that depend on them. And what Attorney General Valderas has brought forth in his letters and his engagement on this issue is the real harms that could occur to New Mexicans, to our communities, and to the economies surrounding those monuments. The real harms that could occur to those communities and the economic engines that those monuments provide to the communities and the volume reflects the importance that those monuments have in Western states. And therefore, the volume per se, the number of comments, is not so crucial as the values and the impact that they represent.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Bob Dittelbach, Inc. Magazine.
A two-part question for Blake Spaulding.
Hi.
Blake, without divulging any proprietary information or private information, can you give me roughly an idea what kind of revenue may be lost if your business does go under or if the designation for the monument is rescinded?
Absolutely. We have been really fortunate in seeing visitation to our northeast part of the monument increasing every year. In the last 4 years, our restaurant business has doubled. Last year, it's no secret, but last year we did $1.25 million of business in 9 months, and half of that goes into payroll. Between us and the Boulder Mountain Lodge that we're on the grounds of, we paid into our local economy over $1 million in wages. Our restaurant pays a living wage. We've never once in the history, in our 18-year history, started anyone at anything even close to minimum wage. So that's another false narrative that you'll hear as a talking point, is that tourism jobs aren't good jobs. Our jobs are career jobs, and many of our employees have been with us for years. We have some who have been with us as long as 17 years. and they have purchased land here. They've begun families. A lot of our former employees have settled here and started their own businesses that also provide quiet youth tourism services, such as guiding services and other restaurants and the like. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. The second part is, assuming that there are other businesses in town, perhaps larger, perhaps smaller, perhaps on the same scale as yours, what kind of verbal picture can you paint of what Boulder would look like in the short and long term if, indeed, the monument designation is taken away?
Yes, yeah, so we are the largest employer in our town, but also in our town is the Boulder Outdoor Survival School, which is a famous primitive skills school. It relies entirely on the monument for its campus. And I lie awake at night thinking about just this question, what will it look like? And I really can only say that it's a reckless and heartbreaking choice, because we have a wonderful, diverse community that by and large agrees that this wilderness really needs to be protected. And I hesitate to make predictions. I see that for us, we'll be involved in a legal battle for a long time to come, should they actually go forth with their stated intention to either rescind or extremely diminish our monument. Our monument, Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, is the largest national monument in the United States, mm-hmm. and they have proposed to reduce it from 1.9 million acres down to 200,000. So, we will definitely be fighting for this. And it's not, I have to say, like, for me, it's not about the money. You know, we're fortunate in that our business has really thrived here, but it's very intentional. We came here out of an abundance of love for the land and a wish to bring people who came to visit it some sort of comfort and happiness. And so that's sort of our business model. And it's very much community-based, and our employees love working with us, and they're all really shook up, wondering what the heck's going to happen.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, as a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone now. Our next question will come from Suzanne Potter, Public News Service.
I just wanted to ask if you have any indication of what you think is coming down the pike. I heard she just said that for Grand Staircase Escalante, but I wanted to know if you have any indication of what you're most afraid of in all these other ones. I mean, there's six or seven of them in California and multiple ones in Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and New Mexico. Can you hear me?
This is Assembly Member Cecilia Aguiar-Curry in California. And many people primarily with the Berryessa Snow Mountain, three small communities did an economic study on how the effects and some of the opportunities in these small communities could benefit from the monument. The study showed incredible numbers, and we've not even had the Berryessa Snow Mountain up and going much at all, but people are very interested in coming to the area. We figure that there's right now that we currently support about 600 jobs for about $55.3 million for economic benefits for the local cities and counties. We've seen a boost in higher levels of visitation. We're really close to San Francisco, and people are trying to go and experience the outdoors. So many businesses in this small town of Winters, primarily, they've taken some risks. They've made some economic jumps for their businesses. They're expanding a new hotel. Actually, two new hotels are being built. And now with the threat of the Berryessa Snow Mountain Monument going away, there's a lot of very terrified business people in the small community of 7,000. So So not only is it just economic, it's just that we were really striving. They were going in the right direction. And so three small cities that have been pounded by wildfires the past couple of years are really up in arms. So we're really concerned about what's going to happen to those businesses.
And this is Melissa Watson from the Wilderness Society. I would just add that the review process that the Trump administration has been undertaking has been fairly arbitrary, so it is honestly a guessing game as to which monuments are most at risk and how the review is being conducted and whose voices are being heard to drive Secretary Zinke's decisions. So, you know, we're anxiously awaiting news, but right now we are concerned that all 22 monuments that have not publicly been taken off of the review list are still under threat.
This is Fawn Douglas, member of the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe, and answering Suzanne's question, what are we most afraid of with the monuments under review? Number one, levels of protection being removed, destruction of the area being further, well, destroyed. I mean, these petroglyphs, our petroglyphs have been used as target practice, and, you know, Joshua trees have been knocked down. Roads have been just going all over these artifact sites. And the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes, along with other conservation groups and other tribes around the southern Utah and Arizona area, have worked together, you know, for years to get this designation in place. This was a step in the right direction for the government to listen to the voices of the indigenous peoples and to work with the other people. You know, we all had a common goal, and that's land conservation.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Alex DeVoid, Arizona Republic.
Hello again. I have another question just about the legal challenges. If will it be more difficult if the recommendations are and the actions taken are to reduce the size of the monuments, as opposed to eliminating a monument? I know Congressional Research Service report said that the president's authority to eliminate national monuments might be constrained, but it hasn't been tested in courts. But past presidents may have shrunk monuments in the past, is my understanding. Would the legal challenge be more difficult if the recommendations and the actions taken are to reduce the size instead of eliminating them altogether?
This is Nada. I can start, and then if the other gentleman wants to weigh in. You know, it is untested, certainly. The previous reductions that we saw were under very different factual circumstances and under a completely different legal regime than we have now that has really made it much clearer that that this type of activity would not be supported by the law. So, yes, it's untested, but we feel it's very clear that that authority does not exist to reduce the monuments either. And I would note these previous monument reductions were, you know, before the 1950s, and they were in very unique factual situations, such as, you know, incorrect surveys. And what we're dealing with here is a very political process that is not based in fact, not based in the real protections that are needed for this variety of objects that were identified in the proclamation. So we, you know, in that kind of situation and based on the law now, we don't think there is any support for a reduction of a monument.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Bob Dittelbach, Inc. Magazine.
A quick legal question. If and it sounds as if some sort of legal challenge will be mounted, where would it begin? The federal district court, or would there be a special petition of the U.S. Supreme Court, considering so many states are involved in this issue? And I throw that out to whoever in the legal end would like to answer that, or at least speculate.
Again, I can start. This is Nada with the Wilderness Society. We would expect those challenges to be filed in federal district court.
Any idea what kind of timetables on past issues that may be somewhat similar to this it's taken for to get some sort of judgment rendered by the district court or perhaps passed upstairs to the U.S. Supreme Court?
It's very difficult to predict how quickly the courts will take action. Of course, we'll be pressing for action with all due speed to make sure these places are protected and ensuring that any interim actions that are taken that endanger them would also be met with swift action, too.
Okay, thank you.
At this time, we have no further questions in the queue, so I'll turn it back over to Melissa with our closing comments.
Great. Well, just once again, appreciate everyone's time today, and a special thanks to all of our speakers who really show the breadth of support for protecting our national monuments and urging Secretary Zinke not to take any action to revoke or reduce the size of monuments and really listen to the voices of the American people. So thank you again for joining us today.
That concludes this edition of Friday Forum. The full audio of this conference call may be heard online at kglp.org. Just select the podcast button. For KGLP, this is Rachel Cobb. Thank you so much for listening.
The voters who gave Hitler his chance at power were a strange mix. Small-town folk, big business, and the army. They put him in.
A Moment in Time with Dan Roberts.
In 1930, Hitler was determined to grab power in Germany. The Great Depression offered him the chance. Votes for the Nazis soared as unemployment and social frustration made very appealing Hitler's message, a neurotic mixture of egregious anti-Semitism, militant socialism, national pride, and half-baked sociobabble. After his initial electoral success, Hitler consolidated his gains by accommodating himself to two powerful groups, the army and big business. He won over many of the generals by promising to restore the army to its former greatness. Some industrialists and financiers thought that if they threw enough money at Hitler, they could keep him under control. Both groups were sadly mistaken. In 1932, Hitler's actual percentage was around 37%, but that made his party the largest in the Reichstag, the German parliament. His voters tended to be rural Protestant peasants, small-town businessmen, and a significant number of upper-middle-class professionals. What is astonishing are the groups that did not support Hitler. Catholics, city voters, the vast majority of skilled factory workers, and most surprisingly of all, most of the unemployed. But after he seized power, they never had another chance to choose. In Richmond, Virginia, I'm Dan Roberts.
A Moment in Time with Dan Roberts is produced at the University of Richmond in cooperation with WCVE Public Radio. Our theme music is composed by B.J. Lederman. Our sound engineer is Rob Richards. Transcripts, podcasts, audio, and video are available at amomentintime.com. To find out how your company can help bring history to life through a sponsorship of A Moment in Time, contact Dan Roberts at droberts@richmond.edu and look for us on Facebook at Moment in Time Series with Dan Roberts.